Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
This episode of Pop Health Week on the Blog Talk Radio and Affiliate Networks is brought to you by the Jefferson College of Population Health, the first college of its kind providing graduate education, supported by evidence-based research, scholarship, and publications. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the producer and co-host of the show. And in the virtual studio today is my colleague, Fred Goldstein, principal co-host and co-founder of Pop Health Week in the city of brotherly love. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Greg. We're here from a little bit chilly Philadelphia, but it's beautiful sitting here with Dr. Nash and his team.
Well, we look forward to hearing from the Dean of Population Health. For those of you not familiar with my colleague, Fred, he is a veteran healthcare executive, the president of Accountable Health LLC, a Jacksonville, Florida-based consulting firm, and the father of the annual Medicare annual wellness visit. Fred serves on the editorial board of the Journal of Population Health Management, is a seated judge at the upcoming World Healthcare Congress Health Value Awards, and Fred is known on Twitter as FS Goldstein. My background includes thought leadership and strategy consulting for hospitals, health systems, and physician-led ventures. I publish and principally author ACLWatch.com, HealthInnovationMedia.com, and PrecisionMedicine.Center. Follow me on Twitter via @2HealthGuru. And now for today's special guest, David P. Nash, MD, MBA, is the founding and current dean of the Jefferson College of Population Health. Arguably the dean of population health, Dr. Nash, academic thought leader, evangelist, and convener extraordinaire, is a force of nature in the emerging science and published best practices of population health management. Repeatedly named to Modern Healthcare's list of most powerful persons in healthcare and sporting a litany of citations and industry honors too numerous to mention. Bottom line, Dr. Nash is a determined warrior to define and architect the sustainable healthcare economy that works for all of us. So Fred, with that truncated version of an extraordinary career, help us get to know Dr. Nash and what's on his plate these days, especially post-population health colloquium.
Fantastic, Greg. Thanks so much. It's great to be here, David. Actually, I think this is the first one we've done live together.
Yes, Fred, great to have you in the studio. Thanks so much, Greg, for the nice introduction. And to all of our colleagues, thanks for carving out time from your busy schedule. We are just about a month out now from our best ever, I think, population health colloquium. Special kudos to my team. 640 attendees, three rock and roll days, Dr. Shulkin's last major public address, ending with Daryl the Man Strawberry. I mean, it'll be a hard act to follow in 2019.
It really will be. You brought in a ton of incredible people. It seems like each year, as you said, it's gotten bigger and better.
It's my biggest headache for next year, Fred, is where do we start? What rabbit am I going to pull out of the hat with Melissa's help next year?
Well, I think you pulled a couple out this year
for sure.
And just sort of starting off, one of the things I think that would be interesting that maybe some of the people at the colloquium didn't get a chance to hear or see was a discussion between Dean Klasko and
Mike Dowling
from Northwell up in New York. And so maybe give us a little insight into what they said, because that was really a fascinating evening.
Sure. So first of all, colleagues, once again, it's just great to be together. So it was the second consecutive year we had Steve Klasko, physician, CEO of Jefferson Health, now 14 hospitals, $5.2 billion delivery system. He's also CEO of our university. And on the other side of my chair was my good friend, Mike Dowling, supporter of the colloquium, a real force of nature in New York, the largest employer in New York State, 20-plus hospitals, probably 21 as of this afternoon. Mike, a career public servant who became a hospital leader, starting by bringing together two very different places, of course, North Shore and Long Island Jewish. So I think having the two of them, when you look at the map, that's a good chunk of the East Coast and what's going on in healthcare, and they're both very politically astute and wired into digital health, where the world is going, individuals. So what was it like? Well, you know, part of the challenge is giving the guys of this size and stature enough wiggle room so that they both felt like they had more time than the other guy. And you better believe they both asked me ahead of time to make sure that that happened. But that's inside baseball.
There wasn't a whole lot of talking over each other, was there, in that event?
Right. So the hardest job for me was keeping them, you know, on the reservation, so to speak. But I think, look, Stephen, especially as a physician, has a lot of passion for, in our town, recognizing that we are in the country's poorest major city, and how he's got to find a way to compete, but to find a way to improve health, our core mission. And I think he struggles with that, quite frankly. And if he were sitting here, I know he would agree. I think Mike is also dealing with a tough political environment in New York City, New York State, all of Long Island, New York. Mike knows that he's got a lot of very different kind of hospitals in his network, ranging from, you know, Staten Island all the way out to nearly Montauk Point, practically, and what that means in an incredibly super competitive marketplace, dealing with multiple insurers. I think Mike is still smarting a little bit from trying to make his own health plan work, and there are various rules and regulations that made it very tough for him. But I think at the end of the evening, they both agreed that we're in a great industry. We're doing great things for people. Mike Dowling in particular was passionate that he didn't want to be in a critical setting every day saying how bad healthcare is. He wants his people to resonate with the central role of taking care of patients and doing a good job. So it's a lot of fun. I have so much respect for both of them. Not easy kind of containing all the entropy on stage. There were no hecklers. Maybe there was one heckler. But I think the audience gets a great evening's entertainment, insights. It's a highlight for me to be sitting on stage with these two guys because I have so much respect for both of them. And I think they gave their heartfelt, unedited, unscripted view. So it's like live television with no three-second delay.
Yeah, and I would tell anyone that if you come into Colloquium next year, be sure to sign up for that extra event.
Yeah, the question
really
is do I still have the stomach to do it three times in a row? You know, that's another issue altogether for our listeners. But for folks who have been to the Colloquium, and, you know, we're coming up on number 14 or 15 next year, and we've got a wonderful conference partner. We have wonderful sponsors. Today, as I was talking with Nikki Buchanan from Phillips Wealth Center, our largest sponsor. Yesterday, I was in Louisville at Humana, our second largest sponsor. So, you know, we work all year long to nurture and maintain and improve all these relationships so these folks feel like they're part of the movement that we've helped to create, for sure.
And while they're sponsors, they also are part of the movement, like
you
said,
bet.
Because they
you
both
bet.
Did presentations at there.
That's right.
And Nikki talked about what WellSend is doing in population health, and obviously Humana with Bold Goal. Maybe you can touch on that a bit.
You bet. And, you know, our listeners know that no truck pulls up with the pot of gold to make this conference happen. It's sweat equity on the part of our college and our team, faculty and staff. So we really appreciate can't do this sort of work without private sector support. So I think we have a pretty good marriage of academics and entrepreneurs and people who are on the cutting edge in the business world. So let me tackle both Phillips and Humana just for a second. So Phillips, you know, I still think of them as a light bulb company, of course. So does everybody else. But you got to give these folks credit. Unbelievable. A global company, right? Headquartered still Amsterdam, where they were founded over a century ago. And they're taking this global company, pivoting worldwide to sort of say, aging is the new frontier. Hey, I get that. And we're going to create technology and high-touch, high-tech, help people age at home, to be connected to their provider, to share bio information with their providers. If anybody could do it, it's a giant with a technology platform like Phillips WellCenter. Humana, again, you know, I'm super proud. This is going to be year 9 as a board member. Not everybody gets to be in a Fortune 50 board of directors. I've had a ringside seat, especially in the last 9 years with the failed takeover by Aetna. Who knows where we're going to be next year. But the market has rewarded Humana and our peer group. Managed care stocks are at a high, high multiple. Humana, is practicing population health every darn day. And the bold goal is 20% by 2020, which we chatted about at the colloquium very quickly. In every major market where there is a big Humana population, don't forget, we got north of 14 million beneficiaries. Humana's goal is to improve health in a measured way, 20% by 2020, and in addition of the 50-plus thousand associates who work in Louisville and elsewhere. So it's very exciting, and I'm blessed, really, to have pals at the Phillips Wealth Center, to be a board member of Humana, have this ringside seat. My job is to then bring the excitement from the ringside to a broader audience. And I think, you know, quite frankly, I think we do a pretty darn good job of translating this, and it's not all about the vendors for sure at the end of the day, but I think we do a great job delivering cutting edge, newsworthy content, as I described in the Dirty Dozen in my opening comments back a month ago.
Mm-hmm. And while they were doing these community initiatives, you were early on with Social Determinants of Health and kind of ringing that bell. And I'll tell you, at the conference, it was loud and clear across multiple spectrums, whether it was technology or programmatics or the science of this stuff. It really got covered probably in its full breadth and depth.
Well, I thank you, Fred. I think probably the greatest representation we have of social determinants in action is the work we do with our amazing partner in New York City, and that's, of course, Hearst Health. And here we are, year 3, in getting applications from around the country. We're blessed to have Emily Frelick, Alexis Skouflis, the whole team, our faculty, you know, getting all of these applications. It's an incredible heavy lift, all the way from Rich Malik to Dr. Greg Dorn, my partner at Hearst Health. When you think about what this prize has done to stimulate interest in the social determinants, and the fact that this somewhat obscure Boston-based housing authority wins this major prize, is on Boston and Northern New England television for 2 days running. They never thought that they were going to get this kind of resources, this kind of recognition. And I think it speaks to housing equals health, something we learned at the colloquium 3 years ago from Jeffrey Brenner. So it's all connected, and I think we've done a pretty good job in promoting the notion that it ain't about Jefferson at the end of the day. It ain't about the white coat. It's all about housing, safety, food, education, reducing violence, reducing depression, reducing the opioid epidemic. That's what's going to deliver health to the country.
And I'm just going to give you some kudos here for this, because you just pointed it out. 3 years ago, we get the presentation from Dr. Brenner about this issue and housing and the rest of it, and through the conference, really, and others getting that word out, we now do have a housing organization.
Amazing.
Getting an award in healthcare.
Right. Thank you, Fred. I think connecting those dots, it's a great opportunity to sit here and just sort of reflect. And gee whiz, you know, I'm old enough to remember when Jeffrey Brenner, I'm giggling, you know, showed up at my doorstep, a kind of scruffy-looking primary care doctor, super skinny, nice guy, shoes not polished, shirt sticking out, had a storefront family practice in downtown Camden, New Jersey, right? And he shows me this data that he had gotten and wanted to know what to do. Man, I jumped up, shut the door, lowered the shades, and I said, listen, you got some explosive stuff here. Keep going. Don't look back. And don't let the bastards grind you down. And gosh, look at him now. So what a great story. Just, again, a real leader who helped us to understand about housing, about connecting the dots, about super utilizers. Now these words are in our everyday lexicon. You know, Fred, I'm old enough to remember back in 2006, when we looked for the first time at hospital-acquired infection, a word nobody even had in their vocabulary. Here we are 12 years later. This is standard measurement procedure. Everybody's looking at these details. So, look, every day we're moving the ball 1 yard down the field, right? So when you add up 28 years, that's a pretty long distance. And we're just lucky to have all these fantastic people helping us.
And you also took on an issue of the day, bringing in Daryl Strawberry, the personal side,
we
really,
sure
of opioid addiction.
Boy, we sure did. And, you know, having grown up in the New York City marketplace on Long Island as I did, and Daryl was a fixture of my childhood, holy mackerel. Now, say what you will about his personal life and what he did back then, but talk about redemption, my goodness. And we didn't know, frankly, what to expect when Daryl agreed graciously, no fee, member of the Hall of Fame. I mean, pretty incredible, right? So he came. I'd never seen him speak in person before. He was captivating. I mean, from the stage, I saw people crying while Daryl was speaking, and admittedly, it was the last day, the threat of a blizzard. That didn't stop over 100-plus people from hanging in there to hear Daryl Strawberry. And he was an incredibly compelling character, incredible. His story, his personal story, I loved his line. I can't do it justice, but I loved his line. I was rich on the outside and poor on the inside, right? Hallelujah, amen. And and to just have a guy who was at the very height of, you know, popularity and celebrity and stardom in the biggest marketplace in the world, New York City, to then crash as low as he was and then crawl his way back and describing his children, that part got me. I could barely talk about it without breaking up myself. So he was a powerful way to end about the population health implications of drug addiction. It's a public health emergency, after all. We're in a town right now where it's the second biggest killer after violence, gun violence, and the opioid epidemic. Crazy. And it's all a population health problem, right? And so Daryl, I think, crystallized, maybe is the right word for me and for the attendees who hung in there with us. He crystallized some of the key issues of the previous 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you then think about, well, what's sort of the next thing coming down the pike? I mean, obviously, we talked about housing, and now that's a feature set, I think, of population health, and
that's
everybody
right.
Recognizes it. And the opioid addiction we're now focusing on, there was an interesting presentation by Mickey Nash.
Yes,
and,
no relation,
and,
right.
And right. Talked about the in-home things like Alexa,
yeah,
and some of these new devices and their potential for population health. And that's really what I think maybe 3 years from now we'll be seeing an unbelievable growth in that area.
Well, Fred, a great point. I'm pretty confident that I'm going to live to see in my primary care practice. This is, after all, my 30th anniversary as a primary care doctor. I'm pretty confident I'm going to live to see, you know, Alexa, refill my Lipitor, Alexa, get me my Omeprazole. And the drone is on its way. Maybe it'll come from Amazon, maybe not. And the drone's going to deliver the script right to my front door, and maybe some healthy food and maybe some recipes for low cholesterol dinner. Who knows? But I'm pretty confident we're going to see continued disruption in the marketplace, maybe led in part by, you know, the usual critters, Google, Amazon. Who knows who else might be in the mix? Walmart, Walgreens, Humana. No one can predict. But I'm confident that more change is on its way. And that's not a surprise, and certainly not to our sophisticated listeners. Look, we've got a $3 trillion industry, right? No, we're the biggest elephant in the room now. And a trillion of that three is probably of no value. So we're ripe for disruption, and whether it's going to be Alexa or Google or Amazon, who knows? But it's on its way, no question.
And don't you think, as you look across that spectrum and see all of these different types of mergers or structures being formed, that whether they're explicitly saying it, a fair chunk of what they're talking about doing is really population health.
You bet. And whether we call it, you know, applied public health or applied health economics or population health, you know, our elevator speech is, look, population health is the roof of the house, and the house is held up by centrality of public health and epidemiology, behavioral economics, certainly held up by health economics and outcomes research, and certainly, too, a great contribution from improving quality and safety, because that's reducing risk, reducing error. Look, and we want to get to the triple aim, right? Improving the health of the population, reducing per capita cost by reducing waste, and improving the individual experience of care. And what we learned at the colloquium, I think, that I have to do more personal work on is embracing the quadruple aim, which is provider health and wellness. And I would broaden that to not just provider, but everybody in healthcare, doing a better job of taking care of our very own. And how great, this is the 10th anniversary of Don Berwick's Health Affairs article, 2008, and it's coinciding with the 10th anniversary of the College of Population Health. So 2018 is a watershed year for us, very, very exciting. And who knows where we're going to be, you know, March 2019.
Yeah, pretty fascinating. You also gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Brent J.
My longtime pal. Gosh, that was very special, speaking very personally. And again, you know, Brent James, incredible physician, educator, leader, member of the National Academy of Medicine. And we're talking about a guy who's been out there really for 30 years, who I think sort of encapsulated the thinking of closing the feedback loop with doctors in a non-punitive way and giving them good information and then teaching them how to improve. It's like the old adage, Fred, you know, you can give a guy or gal a fish and they won't starve, but if you teach them how to fish, they're going to do great and feed their family. And I think Brent's entire career has been on teaching everybody how to fish. He's got thousands of graduates of his amazing special program in Salt Lake City. His writing, he was among the authors of To Errors Human, Across Inequality Chasm, pretty good background. So, gosh, we were thrilled to have Brent there. I think he deserves that and a lot more recognition for his great contribution. Also, I think it was great that we were able to connect a dot from a previous winner of the Hearst Health Prize, right, the behavioral health, mental health aspects of Intermountain Healthcare, where Brent was for so long, now off on his own doing research and consulting. So for me, it was a double great whammy, connecting last year's winner with Brent, having both persons there, and but very especially bringing Brent up to the podium. I could tell he had a special twinkle in his eye getting that award. Plus, he gave a great talk and summarizing in a very clean set of slides, unbelievable 35 minutes, his whole career. And I can't wait to steal some of his material and use it in my stump speech on improving quality and safety.
Yeah, really fascinating. You've got presentation. And then we had a little bit of the political side in a sense,
indeed,
in that we had Secretary Leavitt and
yes,
former governor and former Secretary Governor Thompson come in as well.
Yeah, so let's tackle the two governors first. You know, Tommy Thompson and Mike Leavitt, I'm very blessed to be able to say they're both longtime pals. They are a piece of work, both guys, incredibly smart individuals. I met Tommy probably more than 15 years ago. And, you know, both amazing former governors, former secretaries of health, both Republicans, but moderate Republicans. I think I can't speak for them, but certainly they're shuddering at some of the recent nonsense. But having them both on stage and talking about their recent accomplishments, and Mike Leavitt leading the Accountable Care
Atlas.
Tommy's got his hands in so many entrepreneurial important ventures to reduce fraud and abuse. So they're both still working hard. I give them a lot of credit, credible, and they're not kids, and they're still totally energized and engaged every day. I think they're a great role model. Yeah, great role model.
I thought Secretary Leavitt talking about this Accountable Care Atlas and what they're trying to build.
Yeah, well,
and asking for people
for people's help.
I know.
Well, we're trying to do a deeper dive on ACLC, the Accountable Care Learning Collaborative. I'm pretty overwhelmed by the list of competencies that he and the team have put together. We met privately with the secretary, with his staff. I'm hoping that some of our programming, and I hope our listeners are listening carefully, I hope some of our programming here at the College of Population Health can connect to the ACLC competencies. Like, why not? And whether we work with the Western governors or we do it on our own and we want Mark McClellan's participation, I'm excited about what those competencies, are auguring well for the future. Similarly, with Tommy Thompson, I'm involved with one of his companies in a small way, 4C, to reduce fraud and abuse. I mean, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on fraud and abuse. Imagine if we could capture just a small percentage of that, redirect it. So these guys are titans. We're lucky we were able to have them both. And I want to say publicly once again, I mean, we got them both to come. We didn't pay anybody a fee, right? So they were able to speak their mind. I mean, that's fantastic to be able to have these two guys on stage with me. What a great experience. And then just to close on the politics, so having my 30-year friend, Dr. David Shulkin, and as it turns out, how prophetic that we were his last public event, Fred, and he gave, I think everyone agreed, it exceeded expectations, only macro hit it out of the park. All the population-based improvements that the VA has made, say what you will, look, it's America's biggest delivery system. He had one of the biggest budgets of anybody in that town to run. I think he did, speaking very personally, I think he did a damn good job. He was thwarted by horrific politics, not for today, but we were so lucky to get him, and it was down to the wire. I think my team and I, we were biting our fingernails Sunday night. Was he still going to be in that role? Would he make it? Turns out he had a very busy day that Monday morning. He was with our mayor. He was talking about opioid abuse, and he came. He did a great job. He came to our luncheon. It was actually really wonderful. He exceeded expectations. I hope we'll get to see more of Dr. Shulkin. Of course, he lives locally, along with his lovely dermatologist wife. So I hope we'll get to see more of him. I really do. That would be the only good silver lining.
Yeah, we've got just a minute or two. Obviously, I'm still high off the conference, literally. I mean,
me
it
too.
Was amazing. It was so much information, though. I'm still processing a lot
of
it. So what do you see for next year?
Wow, so we typically start worrying about this summertime, Fred, so you're a little ahead of schedule, and it sure doesn't feel like summer here in Philadelphia today on April 20. But this summer, we're going to sit down and start thinking and dreaming about next year and where we think the world is going. I think we got to confront more about the opioid epidemic and its impact, housing, the next iteration of the Hearst Prize, and we'll be hard at work by August figuring out who we want to invite and what the key topics are going to be.
Well, given how well you've done with each of these and really knocked it out of the park at this last one, I expect it'll probably be a grand slam this next year.
Let's hope so.
Thank you so much, David.
You're welcome.
Pleasure talking to you.
Great to be here.
And that'll have to be the last word for today's broadcast. I want to thank our guest, Dr. David Nash, Dean of the Jefferson College of Population Health, for his time and insights today. Do follow Dr. Nash's work on Twitter via @NashPopHealth, the College of Population Health via @JeffersonJCPH, and on the web via www.jefferson.edu/population health. And for those aspiring data scientists in the public health or population health domain, take note of a recently launched Master of Science degree on Population Health Intelligence led by the talented program director, Karen Walsh. And finally, if your hospital health system, physician venture, or healthcare conference is in the market for social media support, including content development, curation, engagement, or amplification, do ping me on Twitter via @2HealthGuru or email greg@healthinnovationmedia.com, and that's Greg with 2 G's. Fred and I will be happy to lend you our subject matter expertise. Until we meet again on Pop Health Week, for Fred Goldstein, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.